Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 204 of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast, presented by Overdrive. This is Adam. Hi, Jill.
What?
Okay, I know what you're laughing at. You started laughing as soon as I said 204. So we had this issue in the 100s.
That is why I was laughing, because it was me who used to have that problem.
Yeah, long-time listeners may remember, Jill would say, like, 108, and then you'd be like, I don't know, that sounds so weird. And I would just say 108, it's fine. And then as I was saying 204, I was like, ugh, this feels gross in my mouth. Yuck. Anywho.
Back in the day.
Yeah, back 100 episodes ago. It's
like a year.
I know. It's almost exactly a year, because we do two episodes a week. I'm 52, 104, math. This week has been a bear for me for work things and life and ugh. I'm really glad this is your episode to talk about, because I'm fried.
Yeah, it's been a February was so ridiculous. Like, I've not had a normal work week schedule all month, I don't think.
I were trying to schedule an interview for the next Big Library Read, which hasn't been announced yet, so I'm not going to say who the author is. But I asked you, I was like, are you available to do the recording the first week of March? And you were like, shockingly, sorry, it's like, shockingly, Jill's here all of March. And like, just the way you said it was hilarious, because you're right, I feel like I haven't seen you for weeks at a time here.
I literally just choked on my coffee when he started, because I knew where he was going. Mm-hmm. That's what that coffee was.
I'm gonna have one of those weeks in March. You went to the ALA midwinter meetings, and that's what this interview is from that you're going to talk about in a minute. I'm going to the public library one, Public Library Association. They do it every 2 years. But the 5 days before that, I'm going to be in Arizona, because I'm going to spring training to watch the Cleveland Indians. I don't play for the Indians, but I'm going. We've never gone before, and my wife and I are going to do some hiking and everything. I fly from Arizona to Cleveland, and like 5 hours later, I go to Philadelphia, so I won't be here for like 9 days straight. But
are you even going home, or are you just gonna hang out in the airport for 5 hours?
I'm going home. I think it's a little bit more than 5 hours. It depends on when our flight gets back from Arizona. I'll go home, but when I pack for Arizona, I'm packing two bags. I'm packing my work PLA bag and my Arizona bag at the same time, because
I wouldn't, like, how would that even work? Because you wouldn't have been checked, like, you wouldn't have gone through TSA for your second flight. I don't know.
No idea. What I should have done is told our events. Yeah, well, that was the thing. We had this vacation planned for a little while, and then I was looking at the calendar. I was like, wow, that really bumps up with when PLA is. I should have just had our events people find me a flight from Phoenix, but
oh, well.
It's okay. Anyway, that's apropos of nothing about this episode. So you did an interview, and you're going to talk about it now.
Sure. So I got to interview Carter Wilson, who his latest book is called Mr. Tender's Girl. It's out now. He, a couple years ago, read an article about the Slender Man stabbings, which, for those who don't know, were two girls who followed the Slender Man character and thought in order to impress him, they had to stab this other girl. And so he explains how he only read about three paragraphs worth of this article and then didn't read anything else about the Slender Man stabbing. So he had a very limited scope, but it was enough to create this whole other world for his novel about basically the survivor of a similar stabbing, where her dad had been a comic book artist and these two classmates of hers stabbed her in an effort to kind of impress this character, Mr. Tender. So, yeah, it was a really interesting article, or interesting interview I did with him, because we don't really talk about Slender Man, but sort of do, and
I love the idea of an author seeing an article about a real-life thing that happened inspired by a creepypasta, which, for people who aren't familiar, creepypasta is basically an online myth, like something like stories that only originated on the internet and have become kind of like almost like folklore, like tales. And Slender Man is probably the most famous of them. They're making a movie about it. But like, I love the idea of an author reading an article about a thing that did happen, inspired by a fake thing, and then creating his own fake thing off it.
Oh, he goes way into the fake thing too, because, you know, so it's this comic. So I'm trying not to say too much about this.
Yeah.
This, like, when we get to this part in the interview, it's actually really interesting. But, you know, so Mr. Tender is a comic book character in his book. And I asked him if he had an idea in his head of the style. And he told me he actually commissioned actual art.
Ooh.
But then it starts going into a much, like, bigger rabbit hole of all that he actually did in terms of taking this book more outside the novel. So that's really interesting. So people who have read Mr. Tender, Mr. Tender's Girl, or who will, there's some fun little Easter eggs outside of the book.
As we talk to more and more authors, I can just, not the whole asking them the lazy where do you get your ideas question, but just, like, hearing the story of how a book idea can originate from something so minuscule, it fascinates me. It's awesome.
Well, I think it's particularly interesting because he said he stopped reading. Like, he has, other than those three paragraphs, he hasn't read anything about the Mr. Slenderman, or that, about the Slenderman stabbings. And so, because I think because he didn't want it to sort of
influence his.
Correct.
Yeah. That is bananas.
But to be, I know, because. Yeah, and the timing is very interesting, I mentioned, because one of the girls in the Slenderman stabbings was recently given her fate.
Convicted?
Yeah, given, I guess. Her fate. I mean, I don't know how... I mean, no, she's getting assistance, help. But the timing of it is just interesting. It's not something like the publisher plans.
Right. I actually would love it if that was the new way we said that people were like... Given your fate could be that could be so wide ranging.
I don't know how else to put it.
No, I know it could be like, but given your fate could be something like the judge is going to give the criminal their fate, or it could be like, yeah, I'm finding out if I got this job. It's the hiring agent is going to give me my fate. Like, what a story, isn't that?
We'll make a t-shirt. We'll do that. We'll start doing that all the time now.
If people want to get a hold of us, how can they do that?
They can find us on Twitter and Instagram at ProBookNerds, and they can email us directly at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com.
Yes, they can. Anything else you think people should know about?
No.
Okay. I always ask you just to make sure I'm not missing anything. Trap you.
No, I know you're not trying to trap me, but like my brain, like all every other, like in the past we've had like other stuff, mm-hmm. but I don't think we have anything right now.
I don't think so either. Okay. Well, I hope you guys all enjoy this conversation that Jill had with Carter Wilson on Professional Book Nerds Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast. This is Jill. With me today, I have Carter Wilson, who is a USA Today bestselling author. His latest book, Mr. Tender's Girl, is out now. Carter, thank you so much for joining me.
Very happy to be here, Jill. Thank you.
So, can you start us off by giving our listeners a brief introduction to Mr. Tender's Girl?
Sure. So, Mr. Tender's Girl was inspired by the Slender Man crime, and for those listeners who aren't familiar with that, it was two girls in Wisconsin back in 2012. They stabbed another girl out of a tribute to this graphic novel character named the Slender Man. And I was reading this article back in 2012, and I was just so creeped out by this. And then I read how this victim survived, and I immediately stopped reading because I knew this was going to be what my book was going to be based on. So in the case of Mr. Tender's Girl, that victim is, her name is Alice Hill, and she grew up in London, and her father actually created this whole series of graphic novels that were wildly popular based on this character named Mr. Tender, who's essentially a demonic bartender. And when Alice was 14, she's stabbed by two 14-year-old girls, classmates, out of tribute to Mr. Tender. Actually, they believe Mr. Tender had told them this, to do this. So the whole book takes place 14 years later, because I was very fascinated about what Alice looked like as an adult.
Right.
And she's trying to live in anonymity, and she's finding her past kind of coming back to her, where she's realizing she's being watched. And so she basically has to fight against everything, all her impulses, to figure out who's doing this and confront her past in order to kind of make it through the other side.
I think the timing of this, probably not intentional, just sort of worked out that way, but one of the two
girls from the Slender Man stabbings recently was in the news for her results, or just the timing just seems very odd to me. And
yeah, it's funny because I, literally since that day that I read that article, I haven't read anything or watched anything about. And some of it was I didn't want to be influenced by the story. So all I had read were those three paragraphs. And then part of it's also I don't want to feel like I'm capitalizing on this terrible crime.
Right, sure.
But people have sent me links, and there was an HBO documentary out. There's a movie coming out in April, I think, called Slender Man. So it is weird that it's like all kind of creeping up now.
Right.
But yeah, it's when I mention Slender Man to almost any reader, they immediately like, oh yeah, that was, I remember that. That was creepy.
That actually was one of my questions, was the balance between how much of the real story, but if you only read those three paragraphs and just kind of stopped.
Yeah, that was it. And it's interesting because I've seen a lot of reviews that say, if you're expecting this to be about the Slender, it's nothing like it at all,
right.
Which is a nice...
That is a nice
to me.
Thing, yeah.
Because again, I don't want to feel like I'm taking advantage of that story, but there was just, I just remember literally getting chills when I'm reading this news article, and just it's just horrifying and creepy and different, and I just knew there was something there.
There, yeah, for sure. The book is phenomenal.
Well, thank
I will
you.
Say,
I appreciate
and
that.
I didn't really see there were parts I didn't see any of it coming. I don't think just as
oh,
it because especially at the end. All right. So, but especially at the end, it just sort of keeps unfolding, and
yeah.
I'm just like, what is happening? And then a couple pages more, wait, what?
Yeah, a lot of that is born out of the fact that I'm a pantser, so I don't outline. I never have.
Okay.
I've tried. I'm not effective at it. And it's actually how I began writing was, and so my whole methodology is I just present myself kind of an opening scene, and then I try to spend the entire book figuring out what that scene means. And Mr. Tender wasn't any different. So I didn't know what was happening for most of the book. And usually around three quarters of the way, it'll start to like, oh, maybe this is what's happening. I didn't know Mr. Tender was a bartender for a lot of the book.
Wow.
I'm like, oh, Tender, bartender.
That makes sense.
Yeah, maybe he's a bartender. Isn't that interesting?
So do you write in order then?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah, once in a while, if there's a scene I know I want to write, I'll jump ahead. But sometimes it's that scene that drives you. Like you're so excited to write that scene that's your reward for the 100 pages leading up to it. So yeah, I usually write in order.
So, you know, sort of as you had said, if you mention Slender Man to people, they know instantly what it is. And why do you think that sort of story is so fascinating, and why you decided to take that idea and turn it into a book to kind of captivate readers?
Well, I think there's a couple reasons. I can speak for myself at least, but I think a lot of people have the same visceral. First of all, I think the fact that they're young girls is different, and when there's any crime that involves a knife, that is so much more personal, and there's so much more of a commitment to using a weapon like that. There's a will involved, and so when you marry those two things together, and then the idea that they were obsessed with this graphic novel character, and then that there were two of them,
right?
So how could two of them both be at that level of thinking? So I think all of those things create this perfect storm of just creepiness, and there's just nothing else like it. So it hits people like, because you can't imagine. We can imagine a lot of bad things
because
we're exposed to them all the time. That is a whole different level of I don't get this,
right?
And that's attractive to people, that just that idea, because it's this unease that I think is compelling.
So there, as you mentioned, you know, he's a graphic character from a graphic novel that plays a lot of importance in the storyline, the art involved. Do you have in your mind when you were writing a particular style of what the Mr. Tender graphic novels and comics would have looked like?
I do. I actually had them commissioned.
Oh, okay.
So
that would have been my next question.
When I was There's a point in the story where Alice discovers, and this isn't revealing too much, but there's a point in the story where Alice discovers a website. And when I was writing that, and I actually typed the web address in the book, all I could think about was how disappointing that would be for a reader to go there and there's nothing there. So I'm like, I'm going to make that website. And on that website is artwork that from Mr. Tender's novel. So I found a DC Comics, ex-DC Comics graphic artist living in Switzerland, and I commissioned several panels of artwork. So a whole cover of a Mr. Tender graphic novel, some other panels. And then, so now, and I don't really advertise this too much that you can go to this website, but if you go to this website and you got to use the password that's in the book.
Oh, that's incredible.
Then you will experience what Alice experiences for the first time. If you go to without reading the book, A, you won't be able to get in. You won't have any context for it. But if you read the book, you go in, it'll probably creep you out a little bit because I worked very hard to make that a very visceral experience for the reader.
I am so disappointed. It didn't even occur to me to go look to see if that's a real website.
Yeah. And I'm thinking if you're reading on an e-reader, you can probably just
click and link.
Probably.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. I want to go test it. That's phenomenal.
So I got a little carried away with time and expense on it, but I'm like,
no, I kind of love that you know, books are so can be so kind of inclusive, and once the book is over you could talk about it with people, but you sort of added this new element and dimension to the reading experience by doing that.
And it was so Alice also owns her own coffee shop called the Stone Rose, so I created logos for the Stone Rose coffee mugs, and you know, there are photos of her coffee shop with those logos superimposed on the windows, and yeah, it's been fun. I kind of like that
away.
Whole multimedia experience.
Yeah, that's incredible.
For me, it's very fulfilling because
I can see
it's a creative outlet to be able to do that kind of thing as well.
So, I mean, are these things that you sort of had while you were writing, or did they come out afterwards? Like when you know, like with the Stone Rose, did you have an idea of what the logo would have looked like then? Or
yeah, I didn't. When I decided to build the website, I knew there were going to be pictures of her coffee shop on that website. So I'm like, well, you got to have a real photo. So, and yeah, I had several people helping me out, taking pictures, and yeah, it's been fun.
That takes a lot of work. That would be kind of creepy, though, now that I think about it. Like,
yeah, totally.
I'm like, that sounds awesome. And then actually going and reading all that stuff and diving into it, I was like, that would be weird.
Yeah, it's a little weird. It's a little strange.
So do you read graphic novels outside of this?
I don't. Yeah. I mean, I haven't in a while. I remember, you know, reading like Mouse by Art Spiegelman, mm-hmm. and those kind. But I typically don't. Yeah.
So did any of your sort of, I don't know if it would be necessary, but any kind of like pre-writing research involve talking to graphic novelists or?
No, it didn't. I had enough familiarity where I had to get an idea of how many people it took to produce one. Was this realistic? But once I had kind of a feeling behind that, I felt pretty comfortable with it.
Would you ever consider writing a graphic novel?
Totally. I have friends who do that and have commissioned graphic novels, and it's the writing is the easy part.
Right.
Yeah.
It's
so
art.
It's finding the person to do the art. But I would love. I mean, you know, I would love to do a Mr. Tender.
Right, that's what I'm
actual
thinking.
Book. Mm-hmm. I think that would be tremendous, and I would. It's just a matter of where does that fit in your priorities of,
sure.
of life. But,
right.
You know, if there was enough demand for it, I think it would be. I would love to do something like that.
Yeah, so. That's what I kept thinking. I don't read a lot of graphic novels, but as I was reading Mr. Tender's Girl, I kind of wished I had a physical version of a Mr. Tender's graphic novel to kind of pair as a companion piece to really see what the images, at least in your mind, were for Mr. Tender.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. It's when I commissioned this guy to do it, I said, here are the pages in the book that describe them, so you tell me what you see in this. So we were going back and forth with sketches and things like that. I'm like, yeah, I think that's about right. Because I didn't really know myself exactly
right.
what he looked like.
Okay.
So, I had an idea.
You had an idea.
Yeah. That's a big thing in my book, actually, is I don't spend a lot of time describing people. And in fact, if you read about Alice in the book, there's zero physical descriptions of her in terms of, like, she's athletic, but you don't know.
That is accurate.
There's one description towards the end. But you don't know what color hair is. You don't know. And I like that about characters. I like giving very minimal description. I know what they look like to me, but I want them to look like what you think that they look like. That's what I enjoy as
a
reader most of the time. So there are some exceptions. But
that is true. That would be, you know, once you have that physical version of a Mr. Tender,
yeah.
book, then that's what people will think of when they're reading the book, versus right now they can just sort of imagine it however they would like to.
Right. Exactly.
That is true.
Until the TV show comes out, and then, you know, then we all know what they
then we
like.
All know. Then, yeah, yeah. I have to say, it's interesting that you don't really outline or plot anything, because I said I was totally surprised, and yet there were enough clues, which were probably added in as you sort of like...
Some were layered in later on.
But I'm just like making this up as I go along, just kind of blows me away.
Yeah, you kind of hope that your subconscious is acting... for you somewhere, and you know, and it's a lot of trial and error. I mean, I've spent plenty of times where I get about 3/4 of the way into something and it's like, what, where is this going? What, and but sometimes there's enough of those aha moments, like, oh yeah, like the whole Mr. Tender's a bartender.
Right.
Once I knew that, that opened up a whole avenue of what he was like, and but that was about halfway through the book that I realized that. So yeah, but rewrites are essential. You know, there's a lot of those.
So in that sense, were there parts of the book that surprised even you as the author, that by the way things turned out?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
Probably nothing that you can say without
spoiling. Yeah,
yeah. Now that I think about it.
Yeah. I mean, the ending didn't come to me till very late in the game, and it didn't change a whole lot from when that... Because all of a sudden you have that moment, and you're like, oh, all the paths are leading to... Oh, this is what the book is about.
Right.
And I mean, that sounds a little bit precious, I know, but there is that moment where you're like, oh, this is actually kind of what I'm writing about.
Right.
And maybe this relates to something in my life. There's some theme that I didn't realize until now. And, you know, in Mr. Tender, it's very thematic about being addicted to saving people. Mm-hmm. There's just having kind of, there's this hero theme that kind of... it threads through that story, for me at least.
Right.
And I don't think that's a really... I think you'll read it. It's not a really bold theme that you'll see, but that's what it is to me. That need to save people.
Yes.
And being addicted to it almost.
Yes. No, I can... So, having read the book, I would see how that comes through.
And that didn't occur to me until I was pretty much done with it. I'm like, oh, well, isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
Maybe this is what it means. So.
So are you working on anything new, or are you kind of taking a break and on tour?
No, I'm always working on something new, because there's a fear of not producing. And there's, you know, your energy you want to kind of get out there. But I'm working on something that I'm close to finishing, and it's very focused on people with lost memories and connections to one another, and not understanding what that is. So a thriller, but a little bit more, not probably as straight of an arrow as Mr. Tender's Girl is. So there's a lot of threads in it. So it's been very challenging. It's been very entertaining to write, but I've had to take my time with it to figure out exactly where it's going.
Sure.
So we'll see.
So we are at a library conference.
Yes.
We are a library company, and I'm a librarian, and I always like at these sort of instances to ask, did you go to the library when you were growing up?
I did. Yep. Certainly the school library, for sure. But in Westlake Village, California, growing up, the library was a big thing, for sure. And I feel like I've kind of gotten distance from the library until I had kids. Then you're like, oh, libraries are great. I forgot how awesome libraries are. Yeah, I can just go get books for free. That's amazing.
Right.
So, yeah, we've kind of rediscovered that. We have a little library right near our house that has been great with the kids. And then you rediscover things yourself.
Right. What kind of books did you read when you were growing up?
You know, I remember, when I was little, I loved the kids' biographies of, like, Teddy Roosevelt and things like that. But, man, once I hit, like, 15 and discovered Stephen King, there was no turning back. I mean, I really liked that. I like kind of the more the grounded stuff rather than the fantasy stuff. And then I remember in my 20s, I got really into like series like James Clavell, Shogun, and Taipan, and John Jakes, and just I would get lost, you know, in those books. And now I feel like I don't have as much time to read, but I make a commitment to read every day. Usually it's in bed, and I end up falling asleep fairly quickly, but every day.
So I'm a huge Stephen King fan myself, and I have to tell you, when it comes to authors of all genres, all age levels, the author that they read that influenced them the most, it's always Stephen King. It's always Stephen King. And it doesn't matter what they write. I mean, we have stories from people reading it when they were like 13 years old. And, and it just, there's just something about his writing in particular that is just,
it's captivating. And I'll also say that if you talk to a lot of authors, the one book that they'll reference in terms of, you know, a book about writing is Stephen King's On Writing.
Yep.
I mean, and I haven't read a ton of books about writing, but you read that one and you connect with it. You're like, wow, this is somebody who's telling you how to really write the captive. And I don't love everything by Stephen King. I mean, there's misses of his for sure, but most of his stuff, you're just reading the work of somebody who is living the human experience. He's being able to convey that.
Agreed.
And there's something about that most people can't do, which is why it's so successful.
I have this poster in my cube back in the office of the Stephen King universe, and it connects all of the books and all of the different worlds.
The world building he does is phenomenal.
It's incredible. Yeah. And I don't even think I realize just quite how much everything is intersected in his books.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when I read him years ago in high school, there was little things you'd pick up, like, oh, they mentioned this book,
right,
and this character's, you know, the misery books get read in other books, which is always sort of cracks me up. But then actually seeing a physical version of this is just, it blows my mind.
It's funny. Yeah. So Mr. Tender's Girl is my fifth novel, and they're all standalone thrillers, but there are Easter eggs in all of them that connect to another book, whether somebody's driving through a town and that's the town with this. And I know nobody's going to catch that. It's just purely for my own amusement.
Right.
I just like the idea that there is that kind of thread somehow through my own, you know, universe.
So there's a Carter Wilson universe.
I would imagine, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of Stephen King fans who know all of those things, but I'm sure a lot of that started from him just like, this is kind of cool. I want to do this just to amuse myself. Because it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is fun. I like dropping little hints in there.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be part of the fun of having multiple books, is throwing those little Easter eggs and imagining it as its own little universe. Yeah.
And a passing thought. Yeah, and that's all it is, but it's enough.
I always, when I hear stories like that with this or with the Stephen King stuff, imagining this fictional universe where all of these characters live in. That's just fun as a reader to think about.
Yep, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right.
So at the end of all of our interviews, we do something that we call the Nerd Nine, which are nine sort of lighthearted questions. Don't think too hard about any of them, okay?
Okay, no math?
No math.
I'm actually pretty good.
I'm not, so no math on this one. What is the last book you finished reading?
The Boys in the Boat, about the crew team in the 1936 Olympics. So I sometimes when I'm writing, I'm trying to go to nonfiction a little bit. So that's something that's been recently engaging me.
Is that so you don't kind of have influence on your own?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I'm not quite sure. I like nonfiction. I like those kind of history stories anyway. But yeah, sometimes it's just you want to just be in a different world.
Right.
And a real world.
Right.
And so that was a little bit of a reason for me.
Okay. What is your favorite book of all time? I know, it's a hard one.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, good answer. Favorite place to read?
My bed.
Until you fall asleep. I know. We all do that. A place you would like to travel that you haven't been to yet?
Australia. I've been to a lot of places, and I haven't been to Australia.
I've always wanted to go to Australia.
Yeah, it's on my radar.
What is your favorite holiday?
Halloween. I do a huge thing on Halloween. I build animatronics for my porch, and I get kids screaming and crying.
Awesome. It's fantastic. Cats or dogs?
Both, but right now I'm a solo cat person.
Nice. Coffee or tea?
Coffee, yes.
Your favorite food?
Type of food or just food in general?
Just food in general.
Italian food.
And if you could have dinner with one person, dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh, my dad.
Aw, that's a good answer. Carter, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It was wonderful talking to you.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from Overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
We are gathered here today to give you permission to plan the wedding that you want.
I'm Jessica Bishop.
And I'm Sari Wienerman.
And we're the hosts of the Bouquet Toss podcast.
Today's couples have to juggle so many things, from family expectations to outdated traditions and what's currently trending.
So to make it easier, we're going deep to figure out why we do weddings the way that we do, so you can decide what to keep and what to toss from your wedding day plans.
You are cordially invited to subscribe to the Bouquet Toss wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcast.com.
By the power vested in us, we pronounce you free to plan your day your way.